Kendra, is where they make their mark.
This is the time where you've got to turn the table. You've got to take advantage and ride this wave in this momentum.
A goal from your man! Catch them if you can!
Hello there and a very warm welcome to the Match Preview Podcast. Callum Williams alongside Kendra D. St. Aubyn. A little later on during the podcast, we'll be joined by the Austin FC manager, Josh Wolfe. Really, really looking forward to that conversation. But first, Kendra, we've got plenty to unpack before we talk about Austin FC and the United States men's national team. Let's focus on the disappointment, shall we, of last Sunday for Minnesota United. Falling to Colorado Rapids on what perhaps was the most demoralizing day since we've opened Allianz Field.
I think, honestly, Cal, that's the best way to put it. Just extremely demoralizing. And one of those moments, and I think we were showing some shots around the stadium, our fabulous production crew, you know, and there was like dead silence, you know, Ja'Cory with his hands in his face and his head in his hands. And you could just feel the disappointment. And I said, I think it's the first time I've ever seen people leave Allianz Field early, ever. And I think that's why it just truly felt like a punch in the gut. I mean, I didn't even know how to put it in words, because in the moment, it was hard to summarize from a tactical standpoint what went wrong, because I was so wrapped up in the emotion of what went wrong, that it was hard to put a finger on it. It was different losing at Colorado when you're up 2-0 and you lose 3-2. I mean, that was demoralizing, but doing it at home and a man up, it felt like there couldn't be a much worse loss. But I also understand, in talking to the players this week, is you can only dwell on it for a moment, and you watch the film the next day, and then you've got to move on from that. You learn from it, and you go into the next game with a fight and an energy, but you have to move on from it. You cannot dwell on that moment. You remember the feeling, but you can't dwell on it for too long. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, it was psychologically, it was very difficult. As you mentioned, I don't think I ever have seen people head for the exit doors at Allianz Field early. It felt as though towards the end of the game, there was a massive shrug of the shoulders and people said and admitted, well, that's that then. We can't get into the playoffs and host a playoff game. So now we have to focus everything on just simply being in the playoffs. And that is now, I think I might have said at some stage during the broadcast, okay, because I felt this way. I felt at the start of the day, it felt like there was a real opportunity to set the pace. And now it simply feels like they have to keep the pace because the race for the playoffs is so tight. So you've had now a couple of days to dissect it tactically. In your mind, what did go wrong on Sunday against Colorado from a tactical point of view?
Well, you know, in the moment I was thinking, you know, they need some fresh legs on there. I thought Fragopane seemed to start walking a little bit and, you know, understandably so in the amount of running that he had been doing. But I don't know that the right decisions were made. And I'm not calling out, of course, hindsight's 20/20, right? I mean, we can all sit here and say, well, that didn't work or this didn't work. But that's sort of somewhat our job to take a look at it and go, what could have been done differently in those moments? And it kind of felt like maybe a Nico Hansen substitution was right, but maybe you leave on Adrian Anu and Ethan Finley for their work rate and what they were doing up top. And they were still creating chances. And I think when you make the change of a Juan Aguadelo and a Fernando Adi, you're sort of setting a different mindset. You keep Emmanuel Reynoso in there, and he was fantastic once again and had some real close opportunities, to finish some chances. And there were others that could have finished chances. We talked about the Adrian Anu opportunity. I think just before he was subbed off, we talked about Ethan Finley crossing the ball in instead of taking a shot himself and being a little more selfish in the second half. But ultimately, you know, it's hard to keep playing that possession style of combination play in and around the edge of the box when you put a player, especially like Fernando Anian, who's sort of, you know, his specialty is getting on the end of service. And that's kind of, you know, what his, it's not just hold to play, but it's getting on the end of service. And so you're sort of asking for those long balls or those services in rather than the combination play and the through balls and the overlapping runs and the through runs that we saw most of the match. So from a tactical point, and clearly their goals, I mean, transition moments, you know, maybe not quite right positionally defensively and being honest, you know, the opposition keeping you honest. You have a Michael Barrios coming into the match who's playing the number 9, and you still have pace in Jonathan Lewis, who's, you know, one of the more dangerous players going forward and cutting inside. And then you also have pace on the opposite side, who I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it Mosquita? who came in. Mesquita on the left-hand side. So again, pace, pace, pace. It kind of felt like they were going to go for this game. And that's sort of Robin Fraser's mentality has been never say die attitude. And so defensively on the counter, maybe positionally in the back line and in the midfield, just didn't quite respect that enough in transition moments. DJ Taylor looked tired towards the end. We talked about his, you know, question mark of a match fitness standpoint. So there were a few question marks that when you go back and you watch the game, that of course, hindsight is 20/20. And in the moment, it was tough for me to really totally embrace, you know, what happened from a tactical standpoint. And then when you go back and watch it, of course, it's easy to analyze and dissect it. But that's kind of what I saw when I went back and watched the game once again.
Right, but what about the shape of both teams, Kendra? Like, why were Minnesota not set up in a way to deal with the five-man backline that the Rapids had done previously that week as well?
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't have a problem with them dealing from an attacking perspective with the back line. To me, it was more about our back line and what kind of shape they were taking when Barrios comes on the pitch and they make that basically wholesale line change with some attacking pieces. And you know, Cole Bassett, you know, comes on the pitch, another young player with pace who has clearly damaged Minnesota United in the past. We saw it in that Colorado game on the road with pace. They were basically set up in a 4-4-1, and they had their wingers and their pace and ability to go forward. And I just wonder if Minnesota United defensively didn't stick to what they needed to do from a shape in the Ozzie Alonso staying home in front of the back four and just kind of keeping that midline standpoint, that halfway line of confrontation, and being more in cue with dropping and sinking defensively between Brent Coleman and Baki DeBassi to really counteract some of those numbers going forward. And even Chase Gasper, I think, got caught up on the left-hand side a few times when Jonathan Lewis was over there and cutting in across and being dangerous. And that's basically, if I remember correctly, the one that created the penalty when he cut inside and then Barrios got on the end of it and Tyler Miller comes off his line and catches Barrios's foot. So for me, attacking wise, I had no problem with how Minnesota was creating chances against their backline and their midfield. I thought Minnesota had better of the play in possession in attacking moments, first half and second half, and they just didn't finish the chances. So I didn't have an issue with Minnesota's shape. I thought they actually dealt with it well. They just didn't finish some of the opportunities that you need to capitalize on, including in the first half. Ethan Finley goes near post on Yarbrough. I think it takes a deflection, and then Yarbrough makes a foot save. Just little things like that, that, you know, we say goals change games. And Robin Fraser said, you know, goals change behavior. You just wonder if they would have gotten that second one earlier. It just the wheels fell off in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you've asked me to be opinionated, so I'll be opinionated here. And look, for me, look, some of the issues here were obvious in terms of the back five. It was obvious that the two wing backs were tucking inside much more than Minnesota expected, in my opinion. There were several times when you saw Lucas Estevez picking the ball up almost in the center of midfield, which to me meant it was difficult for Minnesota United to operate through the center of midfield and go through the lines as they prefer to do and go through Reynoso. The amount of times Reynoso picked the ball up out wide because he had to pull himself out wide because he wasn't getting the ball in the center of midfield. This is also why I understand why Fernando Adi came on as well, because it gives you the option to go direct. I don't think I would have taken off Unu. I thought Unu was having a decent game, but bringing on Adi, I understand again. And I understand his critics, because at times he looks fairly robotic. At times he looks fairly limited. I understand the critics, but I understand in this situation why he was brought on, because Minnesota were struggling to move the ball through the channels in midfield and move it through the gaps in midfield. So I understand that there was a need to go direct, particularly the later the game went on as well. So I is it ideal? No, it's not. But in that situation, I can see why. And then as soon as the red card came in, it actually, and look, we've seen it's caused Minnesota problems in the past where they can't break down opposition when they go down to 10 men, because they really, really do. They look to counter press. They look to box in as much as they can. And that's exactly what Colorado Rapids did. And when you look at the changes that the Rapids made when they had Wilson sent off a little later into the game, they didn't have a centre forward on the field. There was no centre forward on the field. It was all midfielders, because they were legitimately okay with being a four and a flat, not necessarily a flat five, but a five-man midfield with Barrios operating as a centre-ish forward, almost like a nine and a half, when they were pressing, when they needed to. And I just thought that Colorado came into the game, you know, let's go back to when they had 11 men. They came into the game and they were okay to sit back, and that their plan was to counter press anyway. So them actually going down to 10 men didn't really change much for them at all, in my opinion. What changed for them was, from a personnel point of view, they didn't have a natural center forward on the field, and Barrios was acting as a forward, as he did in Seattle as well. So this is something that the Rapids had been used to, something that they had perhaps had a conversation about during the week, after they had lost heavily to Seattle after going down to 10 men when Estevez was sent off. So I don't think much changed for them when they went down to 10 men. And I think Barrios is quick enough where he can lead the line in a counter-pressing moment. And as you said, quite rightly, all three goals came from counter-pressing. Because the first one was the penalty, which Barrios was taken down from. The second one, Minnesota have bodies piled forward, obviously trying to force the issue. They know they have to win. So the ball comes in from the right-hand side and Barrios was able to peel off of the shoulder and score. And then the third one is absolutely the epitome of counter-pressing. And Minnesota were absolutely left exposed because, again, they had to press, they had to expose themselves, they had to force the issue because they were looking for, at that time, an equalising goal. But what happened was, obviously, they were caught, too many men up the field because they're looking for that goal, and Colorado took advantage of it big time and were able to make it three. So disappointing, not what Minnesota United were looking for. But the key thing now, Kendra, is how they react moving forwards. And that'll be the making of the men, in my opinion, because I still think there's every opportunity for them to finish in the top seven. But things are now so incredibly tight, these next games. We thought the games were important before, but these next games now are absolutely vital. So whilst we're talking about things that are vital, let's move away from Minnesota for the moment. We'll concentrate on Austin FC here shortly. But I want to get your thoughts on the United States men's national team. Victorious over Costa Rica. I was driving at the time, so I didn't see the game. So I don't think it's fair for me to majorly comment on it. I caught the game on the radio before I was able to watch the Mexico national team on television. But give me your thoughts, Kendra, on what you saw from the national team against Costa Rica.
Well, I think it's a little disappointing to me in the sense that, you know, the way they have shown in their two home games compared to the game against Panama. And I understand that. I understand you want to get the points at home. I totally get that. And that's what you concentrate on. But ultimately, you have to find a way to at least put out a decent performance on the road. So even if we're going back to the Panama match, that to me was so incredibly deflating after what a performance against Jamaica, with the high energy, with the young players and the runs coming up the side and the cutting inside and just being able to finish and just exciting opportunities. Then you make all the changes and you have a different game against Panama on the road that completely just felt like it took the air out of the balloon. And then you go back and you play at home at lower.com field against Costa Rica, and you have a solid performance. Thank goodness they recovered from that early goal. I mean, my gosh, like when that ball goes in, you're thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Can this group recover? Zach Steffen, to me, was a big question mark, not because I don't think he's a great goalkeeper, but what does that signal? I mean, one game, one result against Matt Turner, he's been pretty good, really good for them. I get it. Zach Steffen played at Columbus. But ultimately, I thought they got what they needed out of their players. And that was 9 changes in that match. Actually, it didn't end up being 10 because they took...
Because Ariola had to come out.
Ariola was a late scratch from warm-up. So it's technically 10 changes, including your goalkeeper. But a group that was used to playing together and comfortable playing together. So this wasn't wonky like the 7 changes going on the road to Panama. This was a group that had a fire in their belly. And I love, once again, the energy. I love what Musa brings. I thought that McKennie had a fantastic game. I mean, his balls that he was putting on a dime, switching the fields and changing the point of attack. Those are things that he needs to do, you know, going forward, if he wants to, you know, do what he's supposed to do for this national team and be committed to the group. I thought the back line was good. Richards was a little shaky to me. Understandable. It's his first start. You put him in a big moment, probably should have been a penalty against the U.S. if they had VAR, which they don't. So it probably all evens out in for the U.S. as far as, you know, getting robbed by penalties and getting penalties that should have been called against them. So the result they needed, a massive game against Mexico in November coming up. But you hope that everybody stays fit and healthy. Dest is phenomenal. I know he still makes some bonehead mistakes every once in a while and maybe dribbles a little too much, but that finish was ridiculous. So when you have pace on the outside like that, on both sides that you can get in and get behind, and then also catch people when they go off the other direction. That's exciting for the US, and I think the fans should be really excited about this group.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Dest's goal was lovely. Really, really took it well.
I told you, my husband lost his mind. I was like trying to cook dinner. The game's on in the background. He just yells. Our dog jumps. He's freaking out. You know, she's freaking out. Adeline, our daughter's like, what the hell? You know, but that's what you want. That's the kind of excitement you want from those kind of finishes.
Yeah, lovely, lovely goal. Not quite sure the build-up was as beautiful as people are suggesting. It was a little bit helter-skelter, but that is essentially the soccer that Greg Berhalter has promised the United States fans moving forward. Anyway, right, we are running out of time. We've got Josh Wolf, the manager of Austin FC, waiting for us. We'll hear from him after the break.
Minnesota United fans, save time every time when you use online check-in for a great haircut at Great Clips. Download our app or check in online at greatclips.com. Great Clips, it's gonna be great.
And a very warm welcome back to the Match Preview Podcast. Callum Williams alongside Kendra D. St. Albin. Very, very special guest joining us now, Kendra, the manager of Austin FC, Josh Wolf. Josh, I'm actually in your old stomping ground, Kansas City, at the moment, but we don't need to talk about that too much. But let's talk about Austin FC. Look, it's always difficult coming in as an expansion team. Given your record this year, do you perhaps feel a little unfortunate given your standings at the moment in the Western Conference, in a very competitive Western Conference this year?
I think along the year, we could certainly look at games where we could have captured more points. Obviously, we've had 11 or so one-goal games, so we've been quite competitive. We played very well in large portions of our matches this year and large portions of games. So, but it does come down to scoring goals, and Adrian says it quite often, goals change games, and it's a very real statement. And, you know, for a number of reasons, goals change games, but it also gives players confidence, gives teams confidence. It allows you to build momentum. So along the way, we've definitely left many points on the board. And I can look at two games in Kansas City, you know, two games against Vancouver, you know, a giveaway against certainly San Jose, where we're up 3-1. So, you know, in a competitive nature that our league is, when you win games, when you score goals and you win games, it allows you to move up the table. And with 6 or 7 more points, we would be in a much different position. So that's, you know, we are where we are, and it's been difficult. We obviously played a lot without a true striker all year. And now we've made some additions, obviously late in the year, that's, you know, given us a little more balance and put some guys in proper spots. And we've, you know, created a number of goals, scored more goals, and, you know, along the way, we've given up more. But it's part of the challenges as a new team, an expansion team. I don't talk about that too much. That's not a narrative that I thirst or push. You know, we're a competitive team. We have players that have good experience in this league. We brought in a few internationals that have performed well. Some of them haven't, but that's part of our adaptation. And certainly, you know, us learning who we are and obviously where we are in this season with the group that we have.
Well, speaking of that, Josh, I felt like, you know, you guys knew it was going to be a tough task to start the season, starting with all these games on the road, and you were weathering that storm, and it felt like maybe there was even a bit of a swagger about your group knowing, hey, we're going to go on the road and prove people wrong. And then once we get in our fabulous stadium, we're going to be on fire here. And maybe it didn't go exactly that way. You started on a good note on the road, but then getting in your stadium had some ups and downs. What would you attribute to kind of how the season went, started, and then when you guys got in your home stadium?
Yeah, not scoring goals. Again, I think that affects your morale. I think that affects your ability to win games. And then the margins are so thin at that point. The back line feels, man, we can't give up a goal. And they're right. We just, you know, our expected goals for has always been pretty good, but the actual realization of opportunities has been poor. And some of that has to do with, you know, calm. Some of it has to do with maybe the person that it's arriving to not making a good decision or putting the ball away. But then that certainly has an effect on their confidence and the group's confidence. So yes, we went on the road the first 8 games. We knew it was going to be challenging. We went into all those places and competed and certainly even dictated the game at times. And, you know, that's what I was proud about, our ability to implement an identity. Our style of play was very clear. And again, we've generated many chances and we don't score goals, and it affects the group. It affected everybody. And, you know, I think that took away from our ability, you know, at home, you're going to get the boost from the fans. You know, it's obviously dealing with the warm weather, but, you know, then there becomes schedule congestion. But again, the goals help change and influence the game. Again, the individual game, but the group's confidence, the morale of the group, the momentum that can be built. And that became challenging. And you could see when the goals didn't come, it does take away, you know, the team confidence. And that certainly in the summer months was clear. And, you know, that was a challenging moment for us. We didn't have a striker. We lost both our strikers. You know, we lost Ben Sweat the second game of the year to an ACL, left back. And Yuli Segura was our, you know, our cover in the middle who wasn't able to get through preseason. So we had some challenges. And, you know, fortunately, we added some guys and it was later in the year. And again, I think those persons and those players have been quite impactful. One, because they're good players, they're high level players, but it also allows the other players to play their natural positions and be more, you know, Diego's playing in an area, you know, he's playing as a 10 or a winger, which is more his strength. Cecilio's playing as a winger, which is more his strength. So those things have helped, but you know, it's a grind. Every team has their issues. We had ours, we had to fight through it. And, you know, unfortunately we are where we are. We're outside looking in, but it's a competitive group that I think we can compete with anyone in the league. I think we've shown that. And obviously Minnesota's going to be a great challenge and they themselves are in good position.
Yeah, before we talk about Minnesota, Josh, you mentioned Cecilio Domínguez playing as a center forward for a large portion of the season. Yeah. I'm assuming that gave you the option to go a little more direct, but did it at the same time perhaps provide some limitations? And you mentioned the players that you've brought in, that the likes of Gite and Driussi, have they perhaps given you more of an avenue to work on different things?
I think that, I think having Cecilio play as a striker is, you know, I almost apologized at times because that wasn't his ideal position, but given what we had, you know, I had John Gallagher as well. So we were limited and we picked up, you know, Mackenzie Gaines, who's actually a guy that we can play at striker now. So, you know, Cecilio does much better when he's facing the field. He does much better playing out left where he can play in pockets. He can sit on the line. He mixes up his positioning. Having Gite gives you a real reference point. He's quicker than you think, certainly strong and difficult to deal with. And he's a nine. He's got goals on his mind and he knows how to go about doing that. And Sebastian Juice is as high level of quality as there is. And he has so much influence on the group in such a short span. It shows who he is as a character, his quality, his leadership, on and off the field. But, you know, most of the goals that we create have some sort of contact with Sebastian, and that's just what he's been able to do with us. And he makes guys around him much better. Tomas has been much better. Diego Fagundes much better. Cecilio, Musa. So, obviously we picked those guys up later in the year, but they've been great additions and you look forward to again, having them for a proper preseason and building them into what we believe is a good group. And we got to make some additions in the offseason. There's no two ways about that. We got to get better in a number of areas.
You talk about having a very distinct philosophy and a style of play. And I think sometimes it's difficult to get everyone bought in when you're not getting the results that you need. How has the group's mentality been through these ups and these downs with what you want to accomplish and the way you want to play?
It's a great point. And it's what I say is it's the validation. Where's the validation for all the work that we've done? We had all those games at the beginning of the year. We played really well. We had a win against Colorado. We had a win against Minnesota. Then we didn't have as many wins as we'd like. So it's where's that validation for all the work that we're doing? We're creating chances. We're playing well. And you hear it from people. And I'm like, get tired of hearing it. We need to win games too. It's great to hear. Hey, you play really well. But, you know, that goes a long way for the players, the fans, everybody. But the guy's personality and their work and their willingness to come and compete every day has been awesome. And again, I think, you know, it's not hard to play at Q2 when your fans are who they are. They're incredible. You guys have awesome fans as well. And as players, it's such a nice thing to have. It's not like that everywhere in the league. As we know, I've been in this league a long time. And, you know, to have that fan base and support is incredible. We have a way that we want to play. And the guys understand what that looks like. They understand their roles within that. You do need the validation of winning games. And, you know, we beat LA. We beat Salt Lake. We played very good, you know, collective soccer and pretty disciplined. And those are the things that we've really focused on over the last month or 6 weeks. And, you know, obviously you can't win every game, but, you know, at home, we try to do anything and everything we can. These fans deserve it. And, you know, it's a great place to play as you guys may see, if you come here or you'll at least see it on TV.
Yeah. Talk to us a little more about the stadium, Q2 stadium, Josh. It looks incredible. The environment looks wonderful.
Yeah, I mentioned being in this league as long, you know, since 98, and these training centers and these stadiums, you know, like the one that you guys have there with Allianz, and certainly the one we have with Q2, modern stadiums with, you know, for what I say is, you know, it has the Austin personality all the way through it, and from the texture to the food to just about everything inside the stadium, the roof, obviously dealing with the elements, but it's energy and it's electric. And, you know, fans make this game what it is in this country right now. The game day experience is what transcended this sport in this country. I have no doubt about it. And now we've introduced much more talent. There's more thirst from ownership to spend. And you see it just as you guys, you have playmaker like Reynoso and that those types of players, Sebastian Busey, you know, combined with the other elements that this league has become is a game changer. And, you know, it's a great place to play. And again, what's lacked the most is we haven't won enough games. So hopefully you guys can come here and enjoy it. We'll get our win and allow you guys to enjoy the stadium as well.
Oh, nice little add in there, but we'll see. We won't be traveling this year, but hopefully next year we'll be able to see Austin Stadium or Q2 Stadium, excuse me. And you said it a few times now, you've been in this league a long time, but tell me something that maybe you've learned as a head coach of an MLS team that maybe you weren't expecting, or something that's different that you weren't expecting in this moment.
That I've learned. I mean, again, I think there's a lot of communication that goes into this, and you got to lean hard on your staff because, you know, I have my ideas, and delivering those ideas to the staff and getting them to understand what we wanted to be, how we want our culture to work, the environment's really important, and the way we play is really important. Delegating responsibility, communication, those things are huge, huge to players, to staff, to fans, to ownership. So I think there's a lot of different buckets that you have to manage as a head coach. And, you know, I talk with our owner all the time. He's like, look, you gotta macro manage. You gotta help. You know, you have to oversee a lot of things. You can't try to do everything, and it's true. But I've tried to do a lot of things, and because this matters to me, I have a real responsibility to Anthony, and I love our organization. I've sat around these guys for 18 months as we built this thing out. We sold season tickets, and you know, there is a responsibility and a loyalty for me to provide that to them. But those are things I think that I take away. In game management, of course, there's always going to be decision making along the way that you can reflect and review on, which we've done as well. But you know, I have certain things that I came in with expectation. I think we're spot on, but it's challenging. Being a head coach is it's not easy, but it's awesome. I wouldn't change it for the world. All the struggles that we have, it's the best gig in life. It really is.
Adrian Heath has echoed similar statements before, Josh, saying that he loves being a head coach. Well, what have you made of his side this season? What have Minnesota United done this year that perhaps you didn't expect, or that you did expect?
Yeah, again, I think they're a practical group. I think they're an experienced group. They also don't have playing with Lode as a striker at times. It's not a natural striker, but you start to see, again, he's a clever player. Ethan's got great movement off the ball movement. Reynoso is, everywhere. There's like three of them out there. So he's out wide. He's low building up. He's between lines. His ability to deliver final passes, but those final passes aren't anything if you don't have guys like Lode and Ethan and certain Fragapane moving. And that's, you can see those things. Both fullbacks very good in getting in the attack, athletic. And again, very well balanced set pieces, both for and against. They're extremely buttoned up, and it'll be a great challenge for us. We know they're coming off a game where they feel like they let some points get away. They're going to come in full of, certainly intensity. And I know Adrian will get them wound up and they'll be ready to compete. And we got to match that. That's part of, you know, our growth is matching intensity, understanding you got to fight your way into matches at times. And, you know, it'll be no different against Minnesota. They'll come to play, but they'll also come with intensity. And, I got a lot of respect for Adrian and certainly the way that Minnesota plays.
How have you managed this international break? And is it a hindrance or a benefit that you had the break when it came? Because you're coming off the two wins at home against Salt Lake and, of course, LA Galaxy. Then you have this break. Do you feel like that was the wrong time to have a break, or was it good for everybody to refresh?
Yeah, it was. These are some of the things that I've learned. And as the coach, we had the Sunday night game, Wednesday game, Saturday afternoon. So we needed the break. Did it need to be 12, 13 days? Probably not. You like to get those home wins. You like to maintain a rhythm. You guys now have a game. There's a rhythm. So, you know, those are the things you really worry about when you come off of a break. Does the team now get back up to speed? Are you up to speed with what the opponent's going to have? Because, you haven't had a real game in 2 weeks. But, you know, that's what I'm harping on our guys. Understand, you got to start this game fast. It's going to come at you quick. And, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to come into the space and not be ready for what Minnesota's already been doing and having a game last week. So that's the nerviness that I have. But we've talked about that a little bit. It's good to get breaks. We only have one international player. Jean was gone, Kolmanich, and he's been back. He was training with us today. So, but it's good to be able to work on some more details and fine tune things on both sides of the ball. And we spent last week probably doing a bit more of that. Because we had the nothing on the weekend and now you prepare as normal for a week as much as you can and start reining in what we want to do and obviously what the opponent's about.
Josh, we've spoken about different types of ways of approaching certain situations. I'm interested to learn how you approach this sort of situation when you work with somebody like Matt Beasley, who you know from back in the Kansas City Wizards days. Obviously, you brought him in for an abundance of different reasons, quality, leadership, and all of the above. But how, and I know a lot of time has passed since those days when you were teammates, but how do you approach signing someone like that and going from being a player 10 years ago alongside a player like that to now the manager with this player?
Yeah, I think it's, I talk to him like a human being. I mean, Matt's a responsible, experienced player and, wants the opportunity to acquire a player of his quality, his leadership, his calm. And again, it starts with the way that we want to play. What do we want our identity? What's our philosophy going to be built around? And obviously Matt's at the latter part of his career, but he still has plenty to offer. And, his experience, his calm and his guidance within our locker room has been invaluable. We've lacked a bit of that now. He's been out for a number of weeks with his concussion. He'll continue to be in, the protocol returning to play, but it's not, it's no surprise to me when he was in there, we gave up 24 goals in 20 games. And since he's been gone, we gave up about 20 in 8 games. So he has an influence in a lot of ways, but, I talk to him and treat him with respect, but, along the way, we're quite candid. I try to say to these guys, whether you're 20, 25, 30 or 35, you have the ability to learn and there's a responsibility on my part to help guide and help teach. And that's all I am is I'm a glamorized teacher. I get to be, I'm a soccer coach, but I'm a teacher and that's how I look at it. And Matt came with a lot of skill sets and tools, but I feel like I can keep helping him and help him get better. And as long as he wants to play, I'm here to help and obviously provide avenues that help his own individual growth. And in turn, he helps the guys around him. He's such a great guy to have on the team, on the field, off the field. He's done a great job helping this group.
I know sometimes, and this will be the last one for me, I'll let you get back to your busy day, but what if you had to pick a player, who would be sort of not the MVP, but someone that you've been able to just, from a consistency standpoint, setting the tone standpoint? We just talked about Matt Beasley, but is there anybody else that you've been able to lean on quite a bit?
Well, I think Diego Fagundes is someone that's been quite consistent for us. He's been quite healthy. He's been healthy all year. I've had him playing as a 6-8. I've had him playing as the 10 between lines. He's playing as a winger coming in between. And I spent a lot of time. I played against the kid, and that's also crazy. But we coached against him, and in Columbus we saw New England all the time. So I've seen him in many different roles. And he came in here and he got fit and strong and bought in. And again, he's a quiet guy in the way that he is in the locker room. But on the field, he has such a nice blend of ball security, cleverness, and a real desire and willingness to score goals. And he's been one of our more consistent performers. And both goals and assists, he's done well. He could have more. Brad Stuber's another guy that's been pretty consistent. We gave up some goals and build up from goalkeeper. That's part of what we do. We don't want to do that. But I think that affected him a little bit. But he's also in his first year of being a starter, and we got to manage those emotions. We got to manage those moments and grow and learn from it. So, as do I as a coach, but those are two guys I think that have, from the outside at the beginning of the year, you weren't sure what it was going to look like, but healthy, consistent and really good for our group.
Josh, really appreciate your time. Before we let you go, I can't let you go without asking you your thoughts on the recent qualification games for the United States men's national team. Obviously, you have a very good relationship with Greg Berhalter. Yeah. What have you made of the last couple of games?
The goal is to qualify. And, we live in it's a toxic world in social media. You guys, I hear you guys. I listen to you guys. You deliver the game in the right way. It's in such a clean, professional way. That's not the case everywhere. And that's the unfortunate part of our job right now. The criticism and all this stuff, the noise outside is noise. And what Greg does a great job of is managing the circle and the people that are most important. And you want to win your home games. You want to grab points on the road. Performances matter, but ultimately the goal is to qualify for the World Cup, and they won both games at home. And, you know, it's challenging to go on the road, plain and simple, but he's pretty committed and practical. I mean, he's, you know, Greg's done a good job utilizing his players, changing a little bit of the philosophy, not even the philosophy, but game wise, what's going to be needed and certainly what the players are capable of. So, you know, those are things that are really important at the club level, but certainly the international level. And I have full expectations that they qualify. It's never going to be easy. I don't know why there's this narrative that it was ever going to be easy, that we should be going on the road and just winning games for fun. It's challenging, but win at home, try to get your points on the road. It's an easy formula, but yeah, it's not easy to accomplish, but I have full confidence that our guys will get there in the end.
Our thanks to our guest, manager of Austin FC, Josh Wolfe. As always, my co-analyst, Kindra D. St. Aubin, our producer, Tyson Hill, and of course to you for listening at home. All eyes now on Saturday evening as Austin FC host Minnesota United.